Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome in, Michael and Travis with you on our weekly conversation about St. Louis innovation, technology, and just new ways of looking at and thinking about things.
Let's really emphasize the new ways of looking at and thinking about things. I think all too often we look at innovation as some sort of tool or technology or game or app that we can't for just quality of life and enjoyment. But there's a lot of innovation that happens behind the scenes that gives us more information that we maybe didn't have before.
And on this show, big data is going to be a big theme, I guess you could say. We're going to start off by talking about a heartbreaking event that one event that catalyzed, I think, a lot of attention on a very important issue in the city of St. Louis. We're going to touch on the 7-year-old who was killed on North 14th Street on Monday, and some ways that data journalism can help us to get a grasp on, to understand these big human issues that we face in the city of St. Louis. And then we're going to talk about NGA.
And talk about big data, right? Mm-hmm. They're using big data maybe for spying purposes, who knows? But with NGA coming to town in the next few years, there's going to be more big data jobs available. But I like the fact that we're framing this whole show around big data this week.
Yeah, and then there's a maybe not a big data point, more of an obscure data point that we're interested in for the final segment of the show, the big news about Bungie moving their headquarters to St. Louis. Kind of curious, when was the last time a Fortune 500-sized company said, we're going to pick up stakes and just move world headquarters to St. Louis?
Well, of course, Bungie already has a significant presence in mm-hmm. in the region, but for them to move their headquarters from New York to St. Louis, Missouri, that's a good feather in our cap.
Absolutely. But let's begin by talking again about data and journalism and how it can help us understand what's happening in the world around us.
Yes, we have Janelle O'Day from the Post-Dispatch. I've had a chance to get to know Janelle over the last few years as she's been doing a lot of stories related to redlining and the Tipping Point series they've done as it pertains to the housing situation. But Janelle, you recently wrote a piece about looking at data and the unfortunate data and statistics of children killed as a result of violence. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here to talk about this really important topic.
So tell us a little bit about the article you just recently wrote. I mean, that can't be fun data to go through. I mean, that's a tough thing, but it is telling a very important story for the region.
Yeah. So the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, I arrived 2 years ago, but they've been compiling homicide maps since 2014. And we noticed this year that we were getting a lot of reports of children getting killed, mostly by gunfire. And so I'm the data reporter there at the paper, and so I took it upon myself to go back through those maps and pull out how many of those deaths were children. And so far, since 2014 through August 12th of this year, it was 140 kids not killed just by gunfire, but by child abuse and other ways that they died at the hands of other people. And I think that that number just really brings depth to a conversation and to a fact that we all already know, which is too many children are dying in St. Louis at the hands of other people, especially from gun violence.
So I just did some quick math. That's about 25 every year that are being killed. That is more than 2 a month children that are perishing. And, I went on a bit of a rant yesterday on Twitter because we're always getting excited about the MLS announcement next week or the Bungie announcement that we'll talk about or STL made in the excitement of branding, but none of that is going to bring these kids' lives back. Tell us a little bit about what you discovered as you were looking through this data.
Yeah, I mean, we kept asking ourselves what the common thread was between all of these stories, because when we started to look at all of it and looking at doing a story this week, we wanted to just go to the families and anybody that we could find who knew these children that could talk to us about them and tell us about their lives and who they were. So we kept asking what the common theme was, you know, and there really wasn't one that jumped out, except that there was this common theme of gun violence. We all already knew that.
And it's easy, I think, when people see an event, we see a mass shooting, and you're just aghast at the number, you know, that takes place in one moment there. But we wouldn't realize the extent of the situation with children in the city of St. Louis if it weren't for compiling this data. I mean, talk about, I guess, maybe a little bit of a J-school kind of a class. Where do you go to get this data? Maybe a little bit of background. How did you guys decide that this was something, you know, with your resources you wanted to pour into compiling and crunching this data?
Yeah, sure. Again, it started before I got to the paper, you know, with people who had the job before me and my editor, who's no longer there. But she had this idea, you know, we all knew that homicide was a trend that we kept seeing in St. Louis. And so we decided we wanted to start tracking it. And also we track homicides because we don't know of anyone else who tracks it across the metro area and gives these victims a name and a place and some space, you know, after their lives are lost.
So do you go to the police department and ask for statistics on this? Do you comb through the reporting that your own reporters have done, going to the scene and making phone calls on this in the moment as these incidents happen, talking with families? I mean, I guess a little bit through the process of putting this all together.
Sure. Yeah. So we have, I guess you would say, a few sources of data. The main one is our reporting. Yes. So stories that we write, that's where I get the bulk of the data. And those reporters who write those stories, our crime desk, they get the information from police departments. And then also we make requests, periodic requests to the medical examiner. Sometimes the police will not do a press release for a homicide, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, they sometimes just get so caught up in all the work that they have to do that, you know, we will miss it, they will miss it. So we'll ask the medical examiner for it. And so using all those data sources that we can, and we also use the Belleville News Democrat or any other TV reporting, any other reporting that we see in the area of a homicide that they've reported that we haven't, we'll use that for the map as well. So really, any way that we can get information about these victims, we try to.
What I've been impressed with, and maybe I just have not been aware of data journalism in the past, but you know, the work you've done on redlining or the tipping point, or now this work on the children lost due to violent crime, it is taking some numbers and putting human faces to them, and also identifying trends that, Michael, as you said, if there's a mass shooting, we see it all at once. But, you know, if we look at these 140 kids, this is a long drawn out mass issue, right? What kind of trends do you identify, or is that part of the data journalism as well? Is it telling the story of the moment or the past, or is it also making some predictions or identifying what these trends mean in a bigger picture?
Yeah, I think that's why we map things, right, is to see where the trends are occurring most in the area, and then to talk about why. And the stories that address why are not easy stories to do. They're not quick and concise. If you've read anything I've done on redlining, those stories are lengthy. But, you know, our job as journalists is to get the information, put it out there, and then we have identified those trends. We, you know, we have done the work for our officials, for City Hall, for the police. So they know where these things are happening the most. And they probably knew it before we published it, you know. But that's why we do it, is to put it out there and then leave it up to this community to find solutions.
What's been the reaction to specifically this project, Mapping Children? Has it been, I mean, from the police department, have they had any kind of response? Or I can imagine for these families, the attention on their loved one who's been lost has got to be incredible, first of all, but then also realizing that you're shining attention on this greater epidemic too. How do they feel about that?
Yeah. For the families, I think that talking to us can oftentimes serve as a sort of therapy. you know, and if they haven't been able to talk to a therapist or a counselor of any sort, which many of them haven't, especially when you're caught up in losing a family member, it's kind of the last thing you think about. But when some stranger comes and knocks on your door, you know, that's an opportunity for you to talk about feelings and things that you've had kind of building up for a while. And the fact that they will open up and talk to us is something that we are very grateful for. And I'm honestly take seriously the responsibility of carrying that burden of telling those stories.
They're such important stories to tell. Janelle, you mentioned, you know, maybe some of the ways that that our elected officials or civic leadership maybe is held accountable by these data being shared. There was an interesting, an exchange over the weekend on Twitter or later this week on Twitter about the Citizen Service Bureau and, you know, requests coming in and the city not being responsive. Have you seen the city be responsive, again, to either the redlining stories or the story about these children lost? Is there a way that the city can now be held accountable as a result of this reporting?
It's a great question. I think that time will tell. But, you know, to the redlining issue, we wrote the stories and there was already a lot of movement in St. Louis before I even ever got here and wrote those stories to address that issue by, you know, the Equal Housing and Opportunity Council is a group especially that works on it. And they had been working on this project with the city to approve a greenlining fund, or that's sort of the name on the street for it. It's officially the Gateway Neighborhood Mortgage. And so they had been working together to do that. And that product is now, they're still raising money for it, but it's got the official name and they are hoping to get done with fundraising by the end of this year and start making loans with it to address redlining. And the city has been very supportive of that. Mm. As far as, you know, children's deaths, again, time will tell. It's like people ask me when we compile this data, what's the story? We've reported this before. We've seen these stories before. And to me, the story is, yes, but it continues to happen. Mm-hmm. These numbers continue to climb. And that is our question, is what are we going to do about it? To our city officials, to the police, to community members, people who live in neighborhoods where this is happening a lot, what are we going to do? What do you need? What needs to happen for this to stop?
Well, for news consumers, I mean, we see the individual stories day after day, but even for those in city government, assuming their motives are all pure and they're, you know, 100% focusing on what needs to be done, it's also still easy to fall into what is the problem in front of me at this moment? What is the issue at hand versus what's the broad theme here? Is there, you know, something we can take a look at and see a trend? Or it's hard, especially, you know, when you don't have necessarily the knowledge on how to crunch that data. And so what other projects is the Post-Dispatch working on? Or what other examples of data journalism has the Post-Dispatch gone into that you think are really impactful?
Yeah, sure. So we have two interactives, which you can find at stltoday.com, our school guide and our salary guide. And both of those will show you, the school guide will show you test scores, enrollment information, teacher information, everything you need to know, contact information so you can go visit area schools. The salary guide will show you what your mayor makes and what your mayor's staff people make.
But not what department they're paid out of.
But not correct? What department they're paid
and
out of.
And not searchable either, right?
And not, thank you for bringing that up.
Right.
The city of St. Louis this year would not give us the department field for their employees, which I still have never figured out why.
And it's just this year.
It's just this year.
They've done it before.
They've given it to us before. So when you navigate to the city of St. Louis on our salary guide, everyone will just appear in one big list. You can't look at just the police department or just the parks department or just the mayor's office or anything like that. Really frustrating. It looks really ugly, which I don't like as a data person.
Right.
I just hate that. So that's been really irritating for me this year. I'm hoping next year that'll change. You know, we will again open the door to have that conversation with the city next year and hope that it goes differently.
Well, there have been examples of both on the state level, the governor's office, and at the county executive's office of, you know, you mentioned you can't search by who's in the mayor's office, but where do those people get paid out of? Somebody in the county executive's office could be paid out of the Department of Revenue, or somebody in the governor's office could get their paycheck from the Department of Natural Resources or something. So it is important. All these data points are important to figure out the source of these funds.
Well, and I really think as consumers now, we can call BS on data not being available because we all know it is available. right?
And, or data, for instance, with these crime rankings, how people often say Chicago uses different category names, so they don't count in the same rankings and stuff like that. You know, you got to be discerning about how you're, you know, crunching this data.
Well, and I think that's why it's so important that, you know, papers like the Post-Dispatch hire people like Janelle to this is their beat, right? This is your beat. Mm-hmm. Data is your beat.
Yeah. This is what I spend every day doing is working on projects that can make public data more easily accessible for people and allow them to use it to learn about their governments and to learn about their schools and, you know, the institutions that their tax money supports. You know, also doing stuff like what I did this week, counting these children's deaths and using that to assist our reporting. And that's my favorite part about my job is to find numbers and trends in community data.
Well, Janelle O'Day, thank you so much for joining us. You can read about the work that she does at stltoday.com. You could also follow her on Twitter because she's always, that's like the first place. That's like where it breaks first. And you can check it out. Janelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next, Robert Cardillo, former head of NGA, as we continue on Nothing Impossible.
Welcome back to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, Michael had a chance to catch up with former NGA director Robert Cardillo. Let's take a listen to that interview.
For somebody who's not familiar with the term geospatial, or maybe their easiest gateway is thinking about the GPS in their car or Google Maps on their phone, how would you just describe what this sector is, what this technology is, and the different applications that could really change our lives?
So I would make it simpler, and by the way, we coined the term geospatial, so we're aware of its origin, but I think sometimes it's a little frightening to people, and I would just say think about location. Everyone wants to know where they are. They want to know a reference frame for, you know, what's around them, and obviously, as you mentioned, when people want to move from one place to another, location information, congestion, et cetera. It all comes down to that information around location.
And the NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, how does that interface with all of these companies that we're seeing move to St. Louis? What is NGA? What do they do? And why are we talking about it so much? It's been in St. Louis for a while, but what about the timing now has prompted so much conversation?
Yes, there's a great deal of history here, and I'll speak to it at a high level. But first of all, I need to say that as a recently departed former federal official, I need to thank this region for the decades of return on investment that the nation's made. What I mean by that is that we've been in this city and in this region for a long time, not always under that name, National Geospatial Intelligence. We used to be called the Imagery and Mapping Agency. Before that, we were the Defense Mapping Agency and the Army Map Service. And so, legacy of terms, but it all came back to the same rationale and reason for being, which is the heart of the mission. And that is helping the Department of Defense to safely navigate the planet. Sounds simple, very complex. In order to do that, you need to know everything about the planet. You need to know everything about features on the planet. You need to know everything about the gravity and the gravity fields that surround the planet because it affects navigation. Because the Department of Defense sometimes sails on top of the ocean and under the ocean, we have to know everything about both the surface and subsurface level. So I say, you know, safe navigation, but boy, there's a lot of complicated information underneath that. Why are you hearing from us now? The world's changed. I don't need to tell your audience that, but what I mean for that is, and I'll use my career as an example. So I joined this profession in 1983. When I went in the door, sunlight did not follow me. It was a very closed world. It was highly classified. It was uniquely governmental. Fast forward 36 years. There's still uniquely government capabilities. We still have classified satellites and the like. But broadly speaking, the world, commercial, academia, think tanks, have lifted that locational game. I'll just give you one example. Many of your audience will be familiar with Uber. And they think of it as a ride-sharing, you know, provisioning company. I think of it as a geospatial company. They make money, If you hit a button on your device and it knows exactly where you are, you hit a second button to tell the site where you want to go, and it finds a third entity, somebody in a car, willing to move you from one place to the other in a time frame and at a cost you're willing to pay. And if Uber or Lyft or whoever it is does that in, you know, 0.25 microseconds or whatever it is, they make money. If you don't like the math that they did or come back with a price point that isn't conducive, you'll just move your finger to the next app, you'll put your thumb out and, you know, hitch a ride, you'll start walking, you have choices. So the advent of those kinds of capabilities means that NGA has to now reach out to that kind of advance, and thus this conversation we're having now.
Yeah, you made that a big point about having to reach out to the private sector, share ideas. Why is St. Louis the best place for this hub to be established and to grow and for this exchange to take place?
Some of it has to do with the history that I talked about earlier. The region has been invested in this this profession, albeit in a quieter way, because that's how we did our jobs in those days. Why I have so much optimism about the region now is, one, St. Louis has raised its hand and said, we not only are proud of our history, but we're excited about our future, and we're going to do something, okay, to elevate the opportunity of that future. And here's what I see happening. I see institutions like St. Louis University elevating their offerings to prepare the next generation to join the profession, whether they join NGA or Uber or you know, Booz Allen, it doesn't matter. And that's curriculum, and that's getting the right professors, et cetera. Beyond that, I spent part of my day yesterday at Cortex. What a shining example of when a region and a city and industry comes together and said, wow, there's real opportunity in this tech innovation space. If we create infrastructure, if we provide incentives, et cetera, and look at the payoff there. So I think St. Louis has got good history there. I think if you go back to the Danforth initiative some over 10 years ago on the agricultural side, St. Louis has also got a good history. So I think all of that comes together. I think St. Louis has seen the opportunity. I think one of the reasons, I know one of the reasons why I selected the campus site only a couple of miles from here is because I was a strong believer that that proximity is important to the agency. For NGA to go to Jefferson and Cass, build big walls, put a bubble on top of it, put keep out signs out, doesn't do anything but hurt NGA. So part of the reason we're going to move to that location is to make sure we can take advantage of institutions like St. Louis University, entities like Cortex, partnerships with Harris Stowe and WashU, et cetera.
And more with Cardillo coming up right after this.
Welcome back to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation Michael had with Robert Cardillo from formerly with the NGA, talking about what St. Louis is going to look like if the NGA is the big deal it's set out to be.
What does the partnership with an academic institution like SLU look like, especially when you're dealing with, you know, potentially classified information or technologies, but then you're also looking to benefit from whatever's being developed in the private sector, new applications? What does a partnership look like with a university like this, and what's your role with SLU going to be?
So I think it looks like this. I think in a very short period of time, I would like to have NGA professionals who have a decade or two or three of experience of practicing that profession teaching here at St. Louis University as an adjunct professor. Now, that's not my call, but that's an idea that I know St. Louis University is thinking about. I'm well aware that NGA has got interest in that, because from an NGA perspective, here's the upside. Two good things happen. One, you get the next generation better prepared to join the profession by that passing of knowledge and expertise from that practitioner. And two, getting my practitioner out of that classified wall and into the open world, when that interchange happens between, quote, professor and students, that individual, he or she, is going to come back to NGA more capable, more equipped, et cetera. So I think that's just a win-win. You know, to your point about the classified side, yes, it exists, but more and more of NGA's mission is in the open. When you get on a commercial airline, there's NGA material in the cockpit because we provide safe navigation there. That's all unclassified. Same on cruise ships and same on, you know, small and large maritime vessels around the planet. So the world is becoming more open. While NGA will always protect its ability to do it quietly for certain circumstances, broadly speaking, we can have these conversations in the open now.
We're seeing more companies say that they're following the NGA's lead in this cluster to St. Louis. And are there enough employees, do you think, trained, skilled workers here to fill the jobs that NGA is going to be expanding and adding companies like, whether they're already here like Esri or companies that are moving here? What do we do about workforce in St. Louis? Are we in a good position now, or as part of what you're doing at SLU, helping to build a pipeline of these skilled workers for these companies?
I would say good, but I would also say don't relax. No coasting here. I mean, if I put my former director hat on, I was very pleased with the talent that NGA was able to recruit. We've got a great intern program at NGA, bringing about 300 students each summer. Highly competitive to get those positions. So it wasn't like it was hard to find that talent. Now, it's a different question about attracting talent to join the federal government. It's not always an easy lift. And by the way, then to stay with the federal government, we're kind of a stodgy employer, so not for everyone. So we have to work to keep that talent. But I'm glad you brought up Esri or Boundless or Launch Code. I mean, there's many places that you could join this profession and contribute. And I actually think my career is going to be less and less of an exemplar. Well, you joined at 21, you retired when you were 57, here's your gold, by the way, we don't get gold watches, but here's your gold certificate, and there's the door. I think more often it's going to be, geez, I graduated from St. Louis University, I got my geospatial certificate, I did an internship at NGA, that was fun. But I want to help Lyft, you know, reinvent their app, you know, so I'm going to go work for Lyft. And so you do that for 2 or 3 years. Then you might say, geez, it's time for me to pay back. I want to go teach. Or let me go do a 3 or 4 year stint with the federal government, kind of a payback tour, and then come back out, start my own company or join a big one. So, again, I think the talent's there. I think we have to work to keep it there. That is to say, we've got to continue to do better. And then I think we need to maybe think differently about what a, quote, normal career path is. And I think it's going to be quite different in the future.
Yeah, that reminds me of how Arch Grants attracts these companies to town. And even if they fail, the startup goes belly up, they consider it a success because they've brought this talented startup founder to St. Louis, who then usually goes on to start something else that might be successful.
Yeah, I'm with you. I use the term ecosystem. And in an ecosystem, you know, you will have new starts, you will have false starts, right? You will have dead ends that appear. But to your point, I always think that as long as we're advancing our understanding, as long as we're learning, and sometimes the learning is negative, wow, that didn't work, or there was no business at the other end of that idea, as long as the ecosystem is there, you can take that experience and then apply it in a different way. So, quote, failed company A joins, you know, failed experiment B, but the two come together and have successful experiment or company C. So to me, that's why I use the term ecosystem. And I think St. Louis, again, has done a great job of beginning to build that. We've got more work to do, but I'm highly optimistic about that outcome.
There's some big, you know, for instance, Bayer with the Climate Corporation is already here. But companies like Lyft and Uber, like you mentioned, how does St. Louis attract these, especially the consumer level companies that deal in the geospatial space? What do you think is the big selling point for this region to convince them to open an office here?
I think there's some obvious ones. You know, I live in Washington, D.C. Let me just use my NGA example. So about half the NGA workforce is in Washington. About a quarter is in St. Louis and a quarter around the globe. It's in my professional interest that people don't stay in one place for their whole career. We want them to grow and to learn and share ideas, etc. I will tell you, it is difficult to get teammates who happen to live here in St. Louis to move to Washington. Now, they might be excited about the job. You know, maybe it's a promotion or title or something like that. And they go, what does a house cost back there? This is my mortgage today? And so now reverse that, right? And there could be reasons why people, can't, move from one place to another for child care or elder care or whatnot. So there's other factors there. But I will tell you, the quality of life, every year NGA would do, we call them employee engagement surveys, basically a job satisfaction survey the government would run. Quality of life scores were always better out here. There's less traffic. Better living conditions, the sense of you can buy and afford more house, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that kind of advantage exists now. And I think Jim McKelvey's move, with Square, part of that is that, and again, I'm not expert here, but, if you need to hire a, high-end computer engineer in Silicon Valley, you have to price in the housing costs, or you just won't be competitive. I could imagine you could get the same type quality engineer, but in St. Louis at a more affordable price point. That could turn into more competitive business opportunity, more return on investment, et cetera. So I think that quality of life. I also think too, this is more of an intangible. We're in the middle of the country. It's a little, I don't live here every day, so I'm getting out of my thing. It feels a little less crazy when I show up here, okay? People seem a little bit more even keeled. And I don't know how you measure that, but I think that's a selling point. You can be a big contributor to your profession, but you don't have to be on that, that constant 100-mile-an-hour treadmill just to keep up. I think St. Louis has got that added advantage of being a bit more civilized.
And if you're traveling to D.C., I bet the airport is a selling point because you're not trying to wait through security at O'Hare or Midway or Reagan or any of these overcrowded airports, too.
Oh, you're exactly right. Yeah, I build in less time on my return than I do on my fly out, that's for sure.
Well, what do you see as this is an open-ended question, but what is the future you think of geospatial, whether it's you're envisioning an innovation district around the campus in North County, or you're envisioning something that's more, better futures for people here, more career opportunities, however you see it, what do you see as the future with geospatial established in St. Louis?
I'm going to start with bright. I think the future is very bright here. Underneath that overall vision, I do think there's kind of a physical part to the future. It has to do with a campus is going to be built, a building is going to go up, right? And we're going to have entities such as Cortex continue to develop, and T-Rex will grow, et cetera. The Globe Building will become redesigned as a high-tech facility. I think that's all necessary, but not sufficient. What I mean by that is that on top of the physical infrastructure, I think the future needs to have this kind of vibrancy of teamwork and partnership. Now, don't get me wrong. I get it that companies compete with one another and that, there's reasons why a company A may not partner with company B because if they're going for the same market. That will continue to exist. What excites me about the future, though, is because of the commonality of those locational services, your first question about what is this geospatial thing, I think that tide is going to rise. I think that commonality is going to rise, and especially as we move to 5G and the Internet of Things, where even more things are talking to each other from specific locations, I think the advantage is going to go to the entity or the partnerships or the community that can make sense out of what could be chaotic data. The phrase I used to use was coherence from chaos. In such a world, you could imagine being inundated with data. Oh my goodness, I'm getting all these beacons, all these feeds and whatnot, and it could be overwhelming. Could be. I think what St. Louis is setting up to be is to be kind of a place that has a frame of reference and a kind of a mental and physical approach to that challenge, turn it into an opportunity. You move to coherence, you have an advantage.
Coming up, Dick Fleming, former head of the regional chamber, talking about the Bunge announcement.
Welcome back to Nothing Impossible on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back, Michael and Travis, with you, and some major news for the St. Louis region coming down that Bunge Limited, one of the biggest food and agriculture products processors in the world, is moving its world headquarters to St. Louis.
Fortune 500 has landed.
Yeah, and we were wondering, when was the last time? You know, we've had some, for instance, Ralston Purina grew Energizer and then spun that off into a large public company that became, you know, one of those flagships for St. Louis. But was it TWA? Was it somebody else? When was the last time a huge company decided, we're going to move the headquarters to St. Louis? Let's ask someone who might know. Dick Fleming is the former head of the Regional Chamber and Growth Association. At the time, it was called RCGA. Now it's just the Regional Chamber. Dick Fleming, thank you for joining us on KMOX.
You're very welcome, and now CEO of Community Development Ventures here in St. Louis, and I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and companies and cities around the country and here in St. Louis. So to answer your question, I think we get a little bit caught up in our own methodology sometimes when we have this notion that economic development is about recruiting Fortune headquarters, because the era of economic developers recruiting Fortune headquarters is probably last at its peak in the 1960s. What economic development today is about is retaining and expanding what you have and growing the entrepreneurial companies that, you know, Square and Twitter didn't exist however many years ago, and yet they're among the major players in the corporate world today. And I think the context for St. Louis is the good news is we have some of both. We have a long, pretty steady history of Fortune 1000 headquarters. There are about anywhere from 15 to 17 Fortune 1000 headquarters. The last time I looked at a national ranking, New York had the largest, more than 70, followed by Chicago at 27. Dallas is third with 16, and we're tied with San Jose. So we're in pretty good shape on the headquarters side. But as Travis knows from our work together here at CIC and Cortex, we're among the real comers in the country in terms of the startup scene. I think number one in the country in women entrepreneurs, one of the fastest growing in startups, best cities to locate, I think number one for millennials as affordable. So I think our focus on landing a massive headquarters moving from somewhere else would be better placed on how we're growing the economy by expanding the companies we have and startups that are going to be the major employers in the future.
Well, Dick, I do agree, and it does seem like a number of these cities now are trying to grow their own, but I'd be remiss to not reflect on the lather that the region got into over Amazon HQ2 just 18 to 24 months ago. So there are still those efforts to try to land a big fish, but it sounds like what you're saying is we need a lot more, I guess we use the hockey analogy, shots on goal, right? A lot more of these companies to grow.
Yeah, Bunge is going from their previous operating structure was a few people in a holding company headquarters, but then South America, Asia, Europe, and North America were essentially three kind of independent companies that worked on their own. And now what they're doing is going under a global operating structure, which means that all these decisions in all these other areas will now go through St. Louis. But Dick, as we finish up, you know, we love looking ahead at the future here on the show, but in terms of a history lesson, it's kind of fun to reflect over St. Louis over the years, be a little nostalgic. And so when you think back, Dick, what is the last time we had a company like this that you can remember move to St. Louis?
As best I can tell, it was in the 80s and it was Gray Bar. I think it was Gray Bar. But your last point, I completely agree with. The BioBelt hub that we have developed into over the past 20 years for plant life sciences, it is fantastic to have that kind of global perspective headquartered here in Bunge, and it And it's one more piece of the BioBelt. So that's important in its own right.
Well, Dick Fleming, thank you so much for joining us. And listeners, thank you for joining us as well. Michael, next week we'll talk about more of these new chapters happening in St. Louis.
Stay tuned. The conversation continues here in St. Louis, and we'll pick it back up next week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.